Welcome back, everyone, to another deep dive. This time, we're tackling something pretty fundamental, concentration.
That elusive ability we could all use a bit more of, right?
Exactly. And to help us on this journey, we're diving deep into Muni Sadhu's book, Concentration, an outline for practical study. But we won't be stopping there. We're also going to explore his bibliography, kind of like a treasure map, to see where it leads us.
Sounds like an adventure. I'm ready to explore.
Me too. And for our listeners, we're hoping this deep dive will uncover the philosophy behind concentration, what it actually is, and maybe even some practical tips we can all apply.
Sounds like a plan. You know, it's interesting. Sadhu doesn't beat around the bush when it comes to defining concentration. He calls it one-pointedness of the mind.
One-pointedness. Okay, that sounds pretty intense. What does that even mean in, you know, everyday life?
Think of it like this. You got a light bulb. Right? It's scattering light everywhere. Now imagine a laser beam, all that energy focused on a single point.
Okay, I'm starting to see the difference. So you're saying it's about directing our energy, not just like trying harder.
Exactly. And you know, this isn't some new age concept. Sadhu points out that geniuses throughout history, think Newton, Edison, they all possessed this ability to really concentrate. They were able to shut out all the distractions and just focus their mental energy on solving problems.
Makes you wonder if maybe my college days would have been a bit less stressful if I had figured this whole concentration thing out back then.
Right. But hey, it's never too late to learn. And what I find fascinating is that Sadhu explores both Eastern and Western traditions of concentration, showing how they kind of, well, converge on some key principles, even if their approaches seem different.
Oh, yeah. And speaking of different approaches, I remember Sadhu mentions this phrase, quinhentos pensamentos, something like that. It's a Latin American phrase, right? Something about 500 thoughts.
Yeah, exactly right. It perfectly captures that feeling we all get when our mind is racing in a million directions. You sit down to work, and suddenly you're thinking about, like, groceries, that email you forgot to send, what you're making for dinner.
Ugh, tell me about it. I swear I experienced quinhentos pensamentos, like, 5 times before I even finished my coffee in the morning. It's like my brain's a web browser with, like, 50 tabs open. So maybe Sadhu's saying concentration is about closing some of those tabs.
That's a great way to put it. And the Eastern tradition, especially yoga, dives deep into this idea of mental discipline. Raja Yoga, in particular, emphasizes this. You and your mind are not identical.
Wait, hold on. If I'm not my mind, then who am I?
Now, that's the big questions in it. And that's what Raja Yoga really sets out to explore. The idea being, we have this power to observe our thoughts rather than be controlled by them. We're not just like puppets to our mental chatter. We can choose which thoughts to engage with, which ones to just let go.
That's pretty empowering when you think about it. But how do we even begin to separate ourselves from those thoughts? Like, where do you even start?
Well, some yoga practices can get pretty intense, like enduring extreme physical conditions, all in the pursuit of mental control.
Oh, yeah, I've heard about that, like sitting in a cave for months or standing on one leg for days. It sounds extreme.
It definitely takes a certain level of dedication, but the idea behind it is like pushing the limits of your physical body to strengthen the willpower of the mind. Proving to yourself that you can overcome any obstacle, no matter how tough.
I don't know about the cave or the one leg thing, but I'm definitely intrigued by this idea of strengthening willpower. Are there like other ways to train the mind in this tradition? Maybe something a bit less, you know, extreme?
Of course. Visualization and mantra repetition are key techniques in Raja Yoga. They help to focus the mind and create a sense of inner stillness. Sadhu also mentions this thing called vichara, which we'll delve into more later. But for now, think of it as a tool for, like, deep self-inquiry.
So it's like using these specific techniques to redirect our mental energy, almost like, I don't know, training a muscle.
Exactly. You're getting it. Now, while the Eastern traditions start with the mind, the Western tradition takes a slightly different approach. It emphasizes the heart first.
So instead of starting with, like, mental discipline, it's about, what, purifying the heart.
You got it. The Western tradition really highlights moral purification and devotion as a foundation for mental clarity. Think about, like, the early Christian saints. They sought spiritual transformation through prayer, solitude, facing their inner demons.
Speaking of facing inner demons, that story about St. Anthony the Great, that's a wild one. All those terrifying visions and temptations he had to overcome. Man, the mental strength that must take in is incredible.
That story is like a testament to how aligning your emotions with a higher purpose can truly build incredible mental fortitude.
Mm.
And just like in the Eastern tradition, the Western approach uses specific practices, prayers, and mantras.
Right. Like there's that ancient Greek prayer for dispelling evil, the repetition of God the Holy. These are all tools for quieting the mind, right? Finding that inner stillness.
Exactly. And it's fascinating how, even though the emphasis might differ, both traditions acknowledge that inner purification and mental discipline are key for spiritual growth and cultivating concentration.
So, like, two sides of the same coin. One focuses on taming the mind directly, while the other focuses on purifying the heart to kind of set the stage for mental clarity.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, both paths lead to the same destination.
Precisely. And you even have figures who bridge both traditions, like St. Seraphim of Sarov. He integrated elements of Raja Yoga and mantra repetition in his teachings. He saw the value in both approaches and recognized how they complement each other.
That's pretty amazing when you think about it. These traditions spanning centuries and different cultures point to something pretty fundamental about, well, being human. It's like concentration is this universal skill we can all tap into.
Absolutely. And as we delve deeper into Sadhu's teachings, we start to see just how powerful this skill can be. In fact, he even talks about developing psychic powers, you know, cities, through concentrated spiritual practice.
Wait, hold on. Psychic powers? Now we're talking, like, are we talking telekinesis and mind reading here? This is where things get really interesting. So psychic powers, huh? This is like straight out of comic books.
It can definitely feel that way. But Sadhu's careful to make a distinction. There's involuntary cities, those like spontaneous flashes of intuition or premonitions you sometimes hear about. And then there's the intentional pursuit of these powers, which he actually advises against.
Hold up. Why would he caution against that? I mean, who hasn't fantasized about having a superpower or two?
Totally get it. It's tempting. But Sadhu's point is that chasing after those powers can become a major distraction from the real deal, the ultimate goal. Self-realization. It's like getting caught up in the gift shop before you've even seen the museum. You know?
Okay, so it's not that the powers themselves are, like, bad. It's more about the motivation behind them, keeping the ego in check. Would that be accurate?
You nailed it. And this brings us to a really important piece of the puzzle. Understanding the nature of the mind and consciousness itself. Sadhu brings in a quote from Sri Ramana Maharshi, and it's a real mind bender. Mind is only a bundle of thoughts. Stop thinking and show me then, where is the mind?
Whoa, okay, I gotta process that one for a second. It's like he's saying if we quiet all the thoughts, poof, the mind vanishes.
It's a profound concept, right? And it hints at something deeper, a level of awareness beyond those thoughts, those mental formations. It's not saying the mind isn't real, but that it's not the ultimate reality.
So there's something more fundamental, something beyond the constant chatter in our heads.
Exactly. And Sadhu breaks down consciousness into four distinct states. Jagrat, Swapna, Sushupti, Pituria.
Okay, hold on. Gotta admit, those are some big words. Break it down for me. What do they mean?
Think of it this way. Jagrat is our normal waking state, experiencing the world through our senses. Then you've got Swapna, the dreaming state, where the mind's creating its own reality show.
Okay, I'm following so far. What about Sushupti?
Sushupti is deep sleep, that state where the mind's totally at rest, like hitting the pause button on all those thoughts and perceptions.
I get that. So what about Turiya, the fourth one? Where does that fit in?
Turiya is the big kahuna, the ultimate goal, pure consciousness, that state of pure awareness that's beyond thoughts, emotions, even the senses. Sadhu suggests that by mastering concentration, we can actually quiet the mind enough for this deeper awareness to emerge.
You know, it's funny you mentioned dreams. Sadhu tells this story about his cat falling asleep on his chest, and it gave him this crazy nightmare about being buried alive in a landslide. Made me realize that even in sleep, our physical sensations can really mess with our mental state.
It's a great example of how connected our physical and mental experiences are, even in different states of consciousness. Makes you think, maybe Sushupti, that deep sleep state, is like a sneak peek into Turiya, a taste of consciousness without all the mental noise.
Hmm. Maybe deep sleep is like a window into the world beyond our thoughts.
Oh, yeah.
Like that. But, you know, Sadhu doesn't just talk about these states of consciousness. He's also super upfront about the importance of having the right attitude when you're, like, tackling this whole concentration practice.
Oh, yeah. He's definitely not sugarcoating it. Sadhu makes it clear that concentration is a demanding practice. It takes more than just, you know, reading about it. It requires a genuine desire for self-mastery and a willingness to put in the effort. He even admits that he struggled with a concentration course he took because it lacked clear goals and guidance.
It's kind of nice to hear that even someone who seems to have like mastered this stuff had their own struggles. Makes it feel more real, you know, more achievable.
Totally. And that's why he stresses the importance of realistic expectations and being patient with yourself. Progress might be slow and uneven, but the key is consistency. Sticking with it.
Okay, so enough of the theory. Let's get practical. What are some actual techniques Sadhu recommends for developing this concentration superpower?
All right, so he lays out this system that involves both active and passive techniques. But before we dive into specific exercises, he talks about setting the stage for success.
So like creating the right environment, you know, no phones buzzing, no kids screaming, just peace and quiet.
Exactly. Find a quiet spot. Carve out some dedicated time, and minimize those distractions as much as possible. Once you've got that sorted, one of the preliminary exercises he suggests is something called mental travels.
Mental travels? Sounds kind of trippy. Do I need to pack a mental suitcase?
Not quite. It's a visualization technique, and it's all about training your attention to detail. Starts with a memorizing of physical space, like your living room, every little detail. Then you take a short walk, consciously observing your surroundings. And finally, you try to replay that walk in your mind, visualizing everything with as much detail as you can muster.
So it's like taking a virtual walk in your mind. Sounds deceptively simple, but I bet it requires a ton of focus.
It does. And it's surprisingly effective for strengthening those mental muscles and improving your visualization skills. But of course, even with the best intentions, those pesky distractions are going to creep in.
Oh, yeah, those distractions, they're like little gremlins in my brain, always trying to derail my focus. Any tips from Sadhu on how to deal with them?
He's got you covered. One technique he recommends is using sound to shift your emotional state.
Interesting. So if I'm feeling stressed or anxious, I could put on some calming music to bring my mind back to center.
You got it. Having a go-to playlist for different moods can be a game changer when it comes to managing those mental distractions. And if you find yourself stuck on a particular thought, he suggests something called mental substitution.
Mental substitution? Now that sounds intriguing. Tell me more.
It's about consciously replacing those unwanted thoughts with like inspiring sentences or verses, redirecting your attention towards something positive and uplifting.
So it's like giving those mental gremlins something else to chew on, something that actually nourishes my mind instead of draining it.
Precisely. And as you progress, Sadhu introduces more advanced techniques to really push the boundaries of your concentration. He talks about visualizing a pinhead from all sides simultaneously, or holding a mental image of a black screen, blocking out all other thoughts.
A black screen. Whoa, that sounds intense. I can only imagine how challenging it would be to hold onto that image without any other thoughts popping in.
These are definitely advanced techniques, requiring a good deal of discipline and practice. But the point is to gradually stretch your ability to focus, extending the duration of that attention, pushing your mental limits.
So no shortcuts to concentration mastery. Got it. It's all about building those mental muscles over time.
You got it. But even with all the techniques in the world, we all have those moments when intrusive thoughts just barge in uninvited.
Like when you're trying to meditate and suddenly you remember that embarrassing thing you did in high school.
Exactly. And for those moments, Sadhu offers this fascinating visualization technique. He calls it the Odic Cloak.
Okay, now I'm really intrigued. What is this Odic Cloak and how does it work? So this Odic Cloak, it's like some kind of invisible shield that protects us from those pesky thought gremlins.
That's a great analogy. Sadhu describes it as a visualization technique. You basically imagine this like transparent egg-shaped shell surrounding your body.
Okay, so I'm picturing myself inside this protective bubble. What happens next?
Then you consciously project all those intrusive thoughts, feelings, anxieties, all that stuff, out of this shell. It's like creating this mental vacuum, a space free from distractions where you can really zero in on your practice.
So I'm basically evicting all those unwanted tenants from my mental space. Love it. But is this Odic Cloak like something you just leave up all the time?
That's where it gets interesting. Sadhu is really clear about dissolving the cloak afterwards.
Why is that? Wouldn't it be better to have the shield up 10-47?
It might seem that way, but Sadhu says keeping it up all the time can actually backfire. It can weaken its effectiveness over time, kind of like a muscle, you know? If you don't challenge it, it gets weaker.
So my mental defenses could get a little lazy if I rely on the cloak too much.
Exactly. It's important to flex those mental muscles, practice facing those intrusive thoughts head on.
Makes sense. But, you know, building a mental shield every time I need to focus sounds a little time consuming. Any quicker ways to handle those distractions?
Sadhu suggests using mantras, those short, powerful sentences, as a kind of vibratory shield. You can repeat them out loud or silently, creating this protective barrier around your mind.
Oh, so it's like a sonic force field to keep those distractions at bay.
Hmm.
I really like this idea of using sound as a tool for concentration.
It's a powerful technique, and the beauty of it is you can use it anytime, anywhere. Sadhu recommends picking mantras or verses that resonate with you personally. He even mentions the Gayatri mantra and the Nirvana verses from his book.
You're definitely going to check those out. But ultimately, Sadhu sees concentration as a stepping stone to something even bigger, right? Meditation.
Absolutely. He views meditation as the ultimate goal. It's about reaching a state of pure awareness where we transcend the limitations of the mind.
Now, I've dabbled in meditation, and got to be honest, it's tougher than it looks. Quieting those thoughts, man, it's a challenge.
Sadhu addresses that head on. He debunks the myth that meditation's easy, or that anyone can just sit down and instantly achieve bliss. It takes preparation, and that's where concentration comes in.
So concentration is like the training ground for meditation. It's about building those mental muscles so we can eventually tap into that pure awareness.
Exactly. Sadhu describes a technique where you meditate on a series of spiritual verses, letting your mind absorb their meaning. He says the final verse, if fully realized, can lead to samadhi.
Samadhi, that's that blissful state of pure consciousness we were talking about earlier.
You got it.
Huh.
But Sadhu is careful to emphasize that reaching samadhi takes time, dedication, consistent practice. It's a journey, not a destination.
Okay, so no shortcuts to enlightenment, duly noted. But Sadhu takes it even further, right? He talks about a direct path to self-realization. What's that all about?
Right. The direct path kind of bypasses that whole pursuit of psychic powers. Instead, it focuses on directly recognizing your true nature, cutting through the illusions of the material world to experience the underlying reality.
Sounds like a pretty radical shift in perspective. Where do we even begin with this direct path?
Sadhu points to vichara, that self-inquiry technique we touched on earlier. It's all about diving deep into the question, who am I? Looking beyond our roles, our thoughts, our emotions, to uncover the core of our being.
Whoa, that's deep. It really makes you think about how we define ourselves, all the labels we carry.
Exactly. And Sadhu also highlights the importance of finding a genuine spiritual master, someone who can guide us on this path.
So we're not just left wandering around in the dark trying to figure this all out on our own.
Right. A true master can illuminate the path and help us avoid potential pitfalls. But Sadhu stresses the importance of being discerning when seeking guidance.
Makes sense. There are a lot of self-proclaimed gurus out there these days. How do we know who to trust?
Sadhu lays out the qualities of a true master. He says they'll be humble, selfless, genuinely concerned for the well-being of others, not interested in personal gain or exploiting their followers.
So trust your gut and look for those signs of authenticity. Well, we've covered a lot of ground today. From the basics of concentration, Eastern and Western traditions, diving into the nature of mind and consciousness, even touching on psychic powers, and this direct path to self-realization.
It's been quite a journey, hasn't it? And we've really only just scratched the surface of what Sadhu has to offer.
It's amazing to think that all this wisdom is packed into this one book. And you realize mastering concentration isn't just about being more productive or getting stuff done. It's about unlocking this deeper awareness and understanding, finding a way to be in the world that's more present, more focused, and ultimately more fulfilling.
I think that's a beautiful way to sum it up. And to anyone listening who's feeling inspired to learn more, I highly recommend picking up Sadhu's book or exploring other resources on concentration and meditation. There's a whole world of knowledge and practices out there waiting to be discovered.
I know I'm feeling inspired to start incorporating some of these techniques into my own life. Maybe I can finally conquer that quinentos pensamentos and find a little more peace and focus in my day-to-day.
I have a feeling you will. And remember, every journey starts with a single step. Just like those mental travels, focus your attention on this present moment and see where it takes you.
Great advice. Thanks for taking this deep dive with us today. Until next time, everyone.